Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield to Knightstown to Rushville. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine, with care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Rush County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
So the Democrats are trying to meddle, it appears, in Republican primaries, and I'm here for all of it, Casey.
This isn't exactly new, though, is it?
No, it is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob. Casey's here, and let's find out what's going on. Let's go to one of the best in the business, you know, from the Indiana Capital Chronicle, the great Nikki Kelly. All right, Nikki, so you guys have this article up over at IndianaCapitalChronicle.com about how there's billboard up, billboards plural, urging Democrats to vote in Republican primaries.
Yeah, and just to clarify, it's not a Democrat group that's doing it. It's a group called Recenter Indiana. It's bipartisan. They have both Republican, Democrat, and independent board members. Their whole goal when they launched a couple years ago was to focus on getting more moderate candidates on both sides of the aisle. They feel that, you know, on Democrat side and Republicans, we're getting the extreme voices, not the more moderate. And so this is their latest effort, these billboards. And I think they're also going to do some video advertisements on Instagram and Facebook. And they're trying to say, you know, if Democrats vote in the Republican primary for governor, we can get a more moderate candidate to be available for the full electorate in November.
Hey, look, I'm down for all of this because I think all these incumbent Republicans should be moderated right out of office. How big is the push, though? Is there an actual organization behind it? I mean, look, obviously in 2008, you'll remember, there was an organized push for Republicans to vote for Hillary Clinton to try to kind of, you know, mess up Obama a little bit. But that was an organized effort. How organized is this actual effort?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know for sure. It's like I said, it's a nonprofit group that has been around for only about 2 years. So, but, you know, they're trying to make somewhat of a splash. They've got these, you know, somewhat of an ad campaign and just trying to remind people that you don't have to, you know, in Indiana, the primary is open and you can pull whichever ballot you want. Now, there are consequences,
yes,
as we know.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. And Nikki Kelly from Capital Chronicle joins us. Obviously, as John Rust has found out and many other people have found out as well, if you do not vote in two consecutive primaries of a party, you are ineligible to run as that party. So if you have any potential aspiration for running, you know, on a Democrat or Republican side, you probably ought not, or you at least ought think very hard before participating in this.
Yeah, exactly. If you are someone who thinks you might want to throw your hat in the ring someday, you should probably be pretty careful to vote in, you know, the primary that you want to represent, because your last two primary votes are going to count whether you can represent that party.
Okay, so unlike some other states, Indiana's primary election is open, meaning that anybody who's registered to vote can vote. And with Indiana sitting at only 42% of registered voters voting, is this going to help more turnout, you think?
I don't know that it's necessarily aimed at turnout per se. I think it's aimed at, you know, I think the point that the Recenter Indiana is trying to make is that, you know, and you can see it in the six Republican candidates we have. They're all trying to out, you know, conservative each other, right? And I think Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch has definitely moved right compared to how she has governed and been as a lieutenant governor most of her life and her other service. And so they're trying to, you know, get candidates to focus a little more toward the middle voters who have more of a say in the fall. And obviously, I think that probably would work toward Brad Chambers, who doesn't have that much of a record and, you know, seems a little bit more moderate, isn't a huge Trump fan, that kind of stuff.
So you obviously have been very successful as a reporter because you are very good at calling it down the middle on your reporting. But be honest, when you see people like Crouch and Doden and Chambers, who you know are not really conservative, and they have a track record that's not really conservative, and they come out and they're just like grenade-throwing, Trump card-carrying people, don't you roll your eyes a little bit and go, oh, good grief?
Look, I got to be honest, there isn't anyone in this Republican primary that I would not call conservative. And I think that what you just said there is kind of an example of the extremes we're going. Even when you're what has always been considered a Republican, suddenly that's not enough nowadays. And so, I think all six of these candidates are absolutely conservative. And, there's no need to sort of try to be the most conservative of all, which is, I think, their effort.
Okay, let's switch gears real quick. You guys covered this, as did a variety of news agencies. So the luckiest man in the world may be Curtis Hill. He was supposed to have a trial that began Monday in regards to the alleged allegations that he groped these women in the bar. The judge vacated the order, which wasn't like he continued the trial. It wasn't like he pushed the hearing to another date. He vacated. What do we make of all this?
Yeah, I got to be honest, I don't really know. And I checked again today. There's still no real explanation to just vacate a trial. And let's be clear for your listeners, like they're trials get moved all the time, but they were doing all the final stuff. They were submitting and approving jury instructions.
Wow.
He made rulings on what we call motions in limine, which is things that they are or are not allowed to talk about in front of the jury. Those rulings were fascinating, by the way. They weren't going to be able to mention that he was attorney general, that he was a prosecutor. They weren't going to be able to mention that he was in any way intoxicated or his disciplinary hearing. So it was really going to come down to just, did this random man touch unwanted these four random women kind of thing. And out of nowhere, he just vacated it. It didn't say continued. Both sides are being very tight-lipped. Hill's people did say, we didn't settle. They want to be very clear. We didn't settle. But they had been working with a mediator. And there was a mention of, after talking to both parties and the mediator, were vacating the trial. But we're still waiting to see really why and what happened.
I have to tell you, Nikki, Curtis has been in here a few times over the past year talking about the governor's race. And I thought this was a done deal. Like, I thought this was already behind him. And to find out just last week that this was still going on, I was really surprised. Like, it never came up. Like, it was not asked of him in any interview about what was going on, because I just assumed it was over.
Yeah, I mean, at least from the journalist's perspective, we've been tracking the civil case for years. But, I can think of at least two other times the trial was getting near and then it was continued. Obviously, we weren't writing about it until something actually occurred.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest ruling in the case came when they granted summary judgment on, I think, what I would consider the two more important parts of the lawsuit, which was originally the women were claiming defamation, that some things that Curtis Hill said when everything came out defamed them. And there was also an invasion of privacy, count. And the judge tossed those out, which left just the civil battery. It was a much smaller, more tailored lawsuit. And so, it was still there lingering in the background. But
And Nikki Kelly's our guest. A couple minutes left with her from the Indiana Capitol Chronicle. There's the legal ramification, right? Like, obviously, there were no criminal charges filed against him. Then the ethics officer said, hey, no ethics violations have occurred. And even if he being Curtis Hill, gets out of this without any sort of, immense financial ramification or whatever, the reality is, this is putting himself in that position that night, it is one of the dumbest things anybody's ever done in the history of politics, and it really derailed a career that a lot of people thought he was going to be the governor someday.
Yeah, I mean, he had momentum. He's incredibly smart, he's charismatic, he's such a great speaker. He was definitely going going places in the Indiana Republican Party. And yeah, it just absolutely shut that down.
Nikki Kelly, you can find her over at IndianaCapitalChronicle.com. You're the best. Thank you very much.
All right. You guys have a good day.
Yeah, you too. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. How come you're always such a fuzzy young man? Don't want no Captain Crunch, don't want no Raisin Bran. The women beat the men. Let me repeat that. The women beat the men. It is Kendall and Casey. It's 93 WIBC. So for the first time in history, the NCAA women's basketball title game drew more viewers than the men's game. The women had an average of 18.9 million people watching that game, while the men's game had 14.8 million. Now, you could attribute that to a lot of things. Many people are saying that having a title game at 9:20 on a Monday night isn't such a great idea.
Well, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you really do. You cut off. I mean, I told you 10 minutes ago in that game, I knew it was over. So I fell asleep and didn't see the final 10 minutes. Now, my TV was on. So I guess if I had one of those little
meters
that they use, mm-hmm. they'd get credit for it. But it was just like, it's too late. It's on a week night, which mm-hmm. is also somewhat problematic. And I just don't understand why they continue to do this, because let's face it, especially young kids, et cetera, a lot of people are not making it to 11:30.
Yeah. So a lot of people are saying that some other things are feeding into it, like women's sports is having a moment.
Oh, it is not.
It's been just
this
long play, and it's finally coming to fruition.
Bull.
And well, there are a few things that you could cite to say, okay, that's a possibility. Like, there are 15 college women athletes who are currently signed to brands, whereas there's only three college men players.
Yeah, nobody cares.
You could also say that there's going to be an equal amount of male and female athletes in the upcoming Olympic Games. That's the first in history for the Olympics.
Wait. Is that Gumby over there? No, that's Casey Daniels. Because, I mean, you are really stretching.
Well, here's what I think
is going on. You are really stretching. Hey, come on, Casey. Everybody knows why people were watching. The people were watching because there is the greatest woman's basketball player who ever lived, and there's been all sorts of controversy around her, mm-hmm. and people wanted to see her. It's the same phenomenon with Wayne Gretzky. We've already been over this. There is no, oh, there's the same amount of women athletes in the Olympics as the men, or corporations are pressured into putting more women in as spokespeople. Bull. People wanted to see a woman. Women's basketball is not on the rise. Women's college basketball is not on the rise. The WNBA, outside of games Caitlin Clark plays in, is not going to be on the rise, which is why, yes, yesterday, mm-hmm. we had a whole topic about how she needs to just lean in, and the league just needs to lean in to totally embracing the hate for her and basically have her come out and say, hey, in my home court, I'm going to be the greatest heroine basketball's ever seen, and I'm going to be a villain coming to a city near you. Make sure you get your ticket and be sure to get some popcorn and a soda. Let's roll.
I think there's also maybe a couple other reasons why that game was so watched. And one of them, and we've talked about this many times, is that when you watch television, what are you watching for? You're watching for live events, right? And you get that from your local news, and you also get that from sporting events. So when people are tuning into the TV, right, they're watching for sporting events. Obviously, this was a very much talked about, anticipated rematch with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, and you've got that whole thing going on. But the fact that this was a live sporting event, and that's why people are watching TV. You've also got the betting aspect into this. And I asked you during the commercial break, did you bet on that Iowa game?
I did.
Have you ever bet on a women's sporting event before?
No, but I didn't bet because it was a women's sporting event. I bet because Caitlin Clark is obnoxious and annoying. And so I hedged my bet just like mm-hmm. I did with Purdue, where that way I can't lose. I mean, I would have watched that game regardless, because they did. The college basketball did a great job of leaning into this woman plays with, to steal a phrase from the late, great Bobby Heenan, four ham and eggers, right? Like, it's her and four people who would be on a JUCO team somewhere, and they're taking on this unbeatable foe, and you want to see if she is really that great. Look, I mean, I know people are trying to spin this into people wanted, and they did, why? They did it at what was it, 3 p.m. on a Sunday, a mm-hmm. weekend, and it was daytime. Now, we talked about would have been better served as 7 o'clock, probably, but more people were eligible. I also think the issue with the men is nobody knows who's on the teams anymore. Like, I mean, other than the Klingon, whatever his name was, mm-hmm. there's not one guy on UConn the average person could have told you who they are. And they're really good. They're the best team, clearly, overwhelmingly best team. Nobody would have known. Other than people who watch Purdue, nobody knew who they were other than Edie. They're just, it's too, there's no emotional investment in the men's game anymore because these guys are mercenaries. Look at what's happening with Indiana State. Indiana State was the feel-good story of college basketball, and they're all leaving Indiana. They all could have returned next year, and they would have been the story. They might have even been on the cover of Sports Illustrated next year. They're that wild and wacky. And they're all gone. That team doesn't exist anymore. Within a moment's notice, the feel-good story of college basketball doesn't exist. In previous years, it had been, oh my gosh, you know, Avila's coming back, and the coach is coming back, and these other guys who far exceeded expectations. And there's no connection to any of these players because they are hired. They're hired guns.
I think a lot of this, though, is being driven by the media, because when you look at it, the sports global market is a $500 to $700 billion revenue generating market.
Yeah.
Where are they going to grow with these secondary sports? Is BMX going to grow? Is it going to be lacrosse, which you like to make fun of? No, it could potentially still be the main sports that you're used to, football, basketball, baseball. Well, with women as being a growth market, basketball. Boom, there you go.
You said I like to make fun of lacrosse. I don't make fun of lacrosse. I'm just stating an obvious observation. It's a niche sport.
And that's what I'm saying, though. Where are they going to grow? Are they going to grow the men's niche sports, or are they going to grow the women's
Let's do a little exercise here, shall we? In the women's NCAA tournament, did you watch a single game other than games Caitlin Clark played in?
No.
I can say I watched part of the IU Sweet 16 game. They played South Carolina, right? Yeah, the IU Sweet 16 game.
Yeah.
And that's because I was interested in IU. Nobody watched any of these games other than the games Caitlin Clark played in. And so college basketball, I mean, look, if you were college basketball, because she's not obligated to go to the WNBA, if you're college basketball, women's college basketball, wouldn't you literally find some way to back up a truck full of like $20 million to her, like as a collective,
stay
and say yes,
yeah,
whatever you're gonna make it. Look, the bloom is off the rose when she goes to WNBA because she's a professional then, and she's gonna be popular for a year. But a lot of these, like the men, are the same way. In the sports card collecting world, which your man lives in. Nothing, no one's ever hotter than their rookie year, and everybody wants the rookie card, whether mm-hmm. it was Shaq or Michael Jordan or whoever. Same thing with her. She's going to be super popular for a year. Depending on how she plays, she may be able to extend it, but there's just not an interest in this. If you're women's college basketball, wouldn't you be figuring out, like in some official capacity, a way to say, what is your price to return to women's college basketball?
How much NIL you need?
Nothing will ever be equivalent to what you're seeing with her.
Well, I think it's interesting that you bet on a game that she was in, having never bet on any of her other previous games.
Well, I told you. I'm hedging my bet.
You wanted to win some money, and you did.
No, I was going to be really pissed off if she won and I didn't win any money out of it. Mm-hmm. So, we went down together with the ship, but I'd rather lose $1 than her win a national championship.
Well, congratulations on doubling your money, by the way.
Yeah, so I had a good NCAA tournament. I more than doubled my account. Now I can lose it all in the Masters.
Exactly. Now you can blow it later this week. Okay, so yesterday we were talking about restaurants that have gone bye-bye. How about 13 different foods that used to be popular, but we just don't eat anymore?
Yeah.
Number one on the list, ambrosia salad.
What?
Yeah, ambrosia.
I don't even know what that is.
Exactly. Orange slices, coconut, sugar. A big popular dish in the South. It's more of a dessert. It's got little marshmallows in it with a cherry on top. You don't even know what that is, do you?
I've literally said that 3 times now.
It sounds like junk food.
Yeah, it does. Doesn't it? It sounds like an excuse to have a dessert and act like you're doing something good for yourself.
Okay, how about tuna casserole? This used to be
very
popular.
Oh, I love tuna
popular.
Casserole.
Yeah? When was the last time you ate it?
Probably a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I'm a big fan.
Okay, accordingly and relatively.
You walk into a restaurant and go, "Give me a tuna casserole." I don't believe that for a second.
My mom makes an excellent tuna casserole.
Oh, okay. Well, that's one thing. All right, that's a little different.
Another dish that's on this list: the pineapple upside down cake.
Oh, yeah. You know, like if you were at a party and somebody brought one of those, it was always the one that was still completely full mm-hmm. when you'd leave. Like nobody ever sampled any of that.
Fondue is on the list. Now, chocolate fondue is fun, right? When was the last time you had fondue?
Never?
No. You've never
had it once, I think.
There was a while there that there were even fondue restaurants that were popping up. Gather around the melted cheese. Do you remember that?
There's a place called the Melted Pot, I think. That was really good.
Yeah, that was a thing for a while. Deviled eggs is on this list.
What?
Yeah. They're saying that it's just not as popular as it
seems
used to be.
Every event you go to with a large-scale gathering of family and friends, there's
somebody makes the deviled eggs, right? It's somebody's responsibility to bring those. Last on the list that I'll mention here is fruitcake.
Fruitcake.
It's very Christmas-oriented. You see that around Christmas time, right?
Yeah, and everybody's just so excited when you bring the fruitcake.
It's one of those pineapple upside-down cake items that just remains in the package.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we've got your voicemails on the way, but up next, the news on 93 WIBC.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
It's time to hear from you. Kendall and Casey present Voicemails. Brought to you by QC Kinetics for non-surgical regenerative medicine treatments at 317-559-PAIN.
The phone number to get involved, 317-684-8444. It is time to hear from you and your voicemails. What is on your mind today with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So you've been saying that Caitlin Clark needs to be the bad guy in the situation to continue the growth of the WNBA.
I think she needs to embrace, what I said was I think she needs to embrace the hate against her. I think she needs to lean into it and not ignore it and go right at these people, because I think while she'll be hated amongst those people, I think she will be beloved by a large portion of the populace who see this hate as bizarro, pathetic jealousy, and in many cases, just blatant racism.
So it just creates some controversy.
It does.
Which is drama, which is why you want to watch.
Absolutely. The goal is you got a window. And like I said yesterday, the best analogy I can use is when Wayne Gretzky went to the Los Angeles Kings in the late 80s and you saw a huge surge in people who were interested in hockey because of that. And that window lasted about 5-6 years, and then it disappeared, and hockey's back to being a niche sport again and has been for the last 30 years. You got a window. Capitalize on it.
Okay, well, here's a phone call. Somebody agreeing with you, and they have another example.
Hey, guys, I just wanted to call, and I hate to say this, but, you know, Rob is pretty much spot on, I think, on the whole Caitlin Clark thing. I personally grew up in Lansing, Michigan, which I don't know, Casey, what your issues with Lansing, but that's okay. We'll get past that. And I went to the same high school as Magic Johnson. So I became an MSU fan as time went on, and I still remember the MSU Indiana State game where in the finals where MSU wins, and the front page of the State Journal says that the bird turned out to be a turkey, you know, and that rivalry that was set there at the college level transitioned into the rivalry that was with the Lakers and Celtics, which really helped bring the NBA up a lot, you know, kind of saved them, I think, made a lot of teams profitable. And it was that rivalry that they leaned into that helped save the league. And that's what the NBA or what the WNBA needs is, you know, you got to have a good guy, you got to have a bad guy, you got to have sides, you need a Peyton Manning and, you know, a Patriots, you know, situation going on there. So anyway, that's all. Thanks, guys.
So what's Caitlin Clark going to do? Take on the rest of the WNBA?
Yeah. No, that's what she really has to do, but she will be... We're going to use a wrestling term here. Mm-hmm. She'll be the baby face, the good guy to many people, because it isn't like you're going to the city and insulting the fans. Mm-hmm. It is you're saying, look, I am the best player in the history of women's college basketball. I'm going to elevate my game in the pros. My goal is to be the greatest women's basketball player ever at any level. And these people hate me because they're jealous and a bunch of them are just racist. Mm-hmm. Just lean into it. And then you've got everybody, because what's going to happen tonight? What's going to happen this week? What, you know, people be interested in the press conferences, all those sorts of things. And it just, to me, just seems so blatantly obvious that that's what they've got to do. But a lot of it, as we talked about, rides on what is her level of comfort.
Right. She's going to have to make that commitment. And does she want that sort of pressure on her shoulders? One last comment about Lansing. No problem with Lansing, Michigan. Oh. That's where I met the dude. And in fact, he's talking about Everett High School. And I, at one point, worked right next to Everett High School.
How exciting.
And we've got this list of restaurants we talked about yesterday. And Hooters was on the list of restaurants that used to be cool but aren't anymore.
Yeah, now they're gone.
And here's a call about Hooters.
There is, Rob, still Hooters on the south of Indianapolis, down 31. And we have a house in proximity of that. And you always know when it's last call, because about 15 minutes later, and our house is about a mile from it, you can hear all the motorcycles and all the high-performance Mustangs leaving the parking lot. Mm-hmm. So we always knew what time of morning it was on Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah, bike nights at Hooters, that used to be a really popular thing.
Really?
I don't know. Do they still do that?
How would
clearly,
I know?
Clearly.
How would I know?
He's saying that they do.
Well, it's Southside Tom would have zero reason. He has never lied in the history of the show. Kev was nodding as though he understood.
I've actually been to that Hooters. My friend's dad took me and my friends there when I was like 11.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Good move.
So
yeah.
It was great food, great service.
Uh-huh.
I loved it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Great scenery.
Yeah. Lots to look at.
Burned in your memory, isn't it?
Yeah, great memory.
Uh-huh. Okay, so here's a list of restaurants in the central Indiana area that used to exist that aren't around anymore.
The Paramount out on East Washington Street. They had the Mighty Wurlitzer, and in their later days, they had a great buffet there. There was a place called the Ice House. It was out on West Street, and they had great food there, and they had the best tenderloins and the best cold beer ever. Edwards, down on South Sherman Drive and Raymond Street, there near Beech Grove. The best tenderloins ever, the best onion rings ever. The fried pickles were terrific there, and the root beer, it was made fresh on the premises. Many people remember McLarney's. They were out of Morris Street. Great restaurant there, great food. Shakey's out in Castleton, that was a great buffet out there, well worth the drive. We had someplace, I think it was called the Whistle Stop. It was out in Castleton's early days. And they had boxcars. You actually got your hamburger there.
Do you remember any of these restaurants?
Shakey's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The rest of those, no.
Before your time?
Yeah.
Well, what was within 5 years, most new restaurants end up closing? Yeah. So if you can make it in the restaurant biz, you could probably just about do anything. Okay. More fighting about Purdue and IU fans. And here's a call about Purdue.
This is a message for Rob. I went to IU, but I do cheer for Purdue. However, I met a lady yesterday. I said, are you going to watch that game? She says, yeah. I said, what time does it start? She said, after 9. I said, oh, well, Bob Knight would be rolling over in his grave. And she said, good. So there is a thing about Purdue fans not liking IU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about how pathetic it was yesterday. I mean, like, we've had a lot of fun with the Purdue people, but it really was. I mean, it was pathetic, and it showed that the little brother syndrome that exists with Purdue, that in your moment of glory, your moment on the national stage, mm-hmm. the Purdue people were fixated on chanting about IU.
Yeah.
And so for all you people who are like, well, I cheer for everyone, Purdue people told you what they thought of you. There's not a single solitary Purdue person who I believe was cheering for IU in 1987 or 1981 or 1976 or 2002 or any other time, Casey. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to admit, as a Purdue fan, that's a horrible look that you're so... I will not be ignored, Dan. You're so Meryl Streep that in your moment of glory, you're chanting about IU.
Okay, so Hoosiers really showing that basketball does rule supreme in the great state of Indiana, because more phone calls about basketball. And this time it's about Caitlin Clark once again.
Hey, just listening to you guys about the Caitlin Clark and the NBA and all the hate. A good business person, male or female, you know, we only got two genders anyway, but back to the subject, good businessman or woman, he's going to take that deal from that Ice-T dude that wanted to pay her $5 million to play in that three-on-three league, and then make, you know, the endorsements on top of that. Hey, she could take care of a lot of people with all that money.
So I don't know what endorsement deal he's talking about.
So Ice Cube, Ice-T was close.
Yeah.
Ice Cube has a celebrity basketball league. It's a three-on-three league. They have a national television deal. I think it's like one of those where it's on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and he offered her $5 million to play in his three-on-three basketball league, which he claimed also would have allowed her to play in the WNBA. Now, what was interesting was the Barstool guy came out and said, I'll pay you $10 million to play on our intramural team.
Mm-hmm.
And here, if I were her.
Take any one of those.
Well, here's what I'm saying. If I were her, I would do one of two things, because the WNBA thing is not going to work. She does not appear to have the personality necessary to embrace the hate in order to make this thing work on a grandiose scale. And I'm not saying that to be critical. I'm saying that's just how she appears to be wired. If I were her, I would do one of two things. I would either try to negotiate some sort of deal to go back to college basketball. But I think she so cares about those records that then it would taint the record. So if you're not going to do that, just turn yourself into a traveling freak show, because your shelf life is so limited that I would gobble up all of these opportunities that I could. I'm not even sure I would play in the WNBA. I think I would almost turn myself into some traveling freak show where you've got to pay, or somebody's got to pay, a premium in order to watch me play basketball. And you would keep the people wanting to see you if you keep your exposure limited to these sorts of things. And I think she'd make more money in the process.
Right, make as much money as you can in a short amount of time, and then move along with your life and be done.
Absolutely.
And don't worry about the hassle and all the hate.
Can you tell me any WNBA records? Like everybody, you know, the home run record in baseball or whatever. Can you tell me any?
No.
No, nobody. And I'm not saying that because nobody can. The records mean nothing there. Whatever she's going to do, this is the bad position she's in now. She can only not exceed expectations.
Right.
No matter what she does, she will not exceed people's expectations. She will likely not achieve the expectations, because now, let's face it, in college, she's clearly the best, and you're playing against girls. Now you're playing against a bunch of grown women, night in and night out. So even if you're an effective WNBA player or a good NBA WNBA player, you're not going to hit the level of expectation that people have for you, and that flame burns out pretty damn quick. So if I were her, man, all of the Barstool guy, the three-on-three, all of that, and keep yourself from getting exposed is not maybe potentially living up to the expectations.
Strike while the iron's
exactly
hot. Of course, there's the other side of it where maybe she does do it for the love of the game, and rising tide raises all boats. Maybe she wants to try and do something for the sport. That's a lot of pressure on her to be able to do that. It is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Hammer's going to join us next.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Good morning. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC, and Hammer joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. And tomorrow morning, tickets go on sale for our annual event, Tales from the Track, presented by our awesome friends at Relay Indiana.
Dick Simon.
Not Dick Simon.
Dang.
Very close. 2008 winner, IndyCar legend Scott Dixon.
Oh, nice. How exciting.
Yes, Scott Dixon will be our guest this year. The booze is provided by Hotel Tango. Ooh. And this is going to be really fun. If you've never been to one of our Tales from the Track event, you know, if you're an Indy 500 fan, you're going to dig it. If you're the casual fan that just gets into racing maybe once a year here in Indy, you'll dig it. Fun stories, you know, it's a lot of food, it's a lot of drinks. Scott Dixon's going to take pictures with everybody, sign stuff, and man, we're going to have a good time. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at WIBC.com, Monday, May 20th. This year, it's over at the Stutz Building.
Oh, the Vision Loft.
New location.
Stutz Building. Mm-hmm. I've DJed an event there. It's beautiful. Beautiful event center. And yeah, man, tickets go fast. This bad boy sells out every year. So we hope to see all of you guys there. Tickets on sale tomorrow, I think, starting at 6:30 a.m.
Are you feuding with some guy who used to play for Purdue?
A little bit on Twitter. So Rafael Davis.
Who?
He's the guy that's on the Big Ten Network now and covers basketball. So during the championship game on Monday, he puts out this statement. And it's
now, he played at Purdue.
Yes. It's probably clickbait, and I fell for it. But it was so over the top, I felt like I had to weigh in. Quote, if Zach Edey wins tonight, he will be the greatest Big Ten player of all time. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing.
What? Yeah.
So I saw that, and I thought, well, that's a bold statement because you know, there's a number of dudes that were pretty damn good. Now, it became a moot point because Purdue got beat.
Right.
But the question was, let's just, for argument's sake, say that Purdue won. Is Zach Edey in the conversation of the greatest Big Ten player of all time?
No way.
Because I could make a case he's not the greatest Purdue player of all time.
Glenn Robinson.
Rick Mount, Glenn Robinson. Joe Barry Carroll was really good.
That's
now, might not have the accolades, you know, the two-time player of the year, Zach Edey did, but I mean, Glenn Robinson was the number one pick in the NBA draft, the big dog.
And let's face it, the teams that they were playing consistently in the Big Ten and in the NCAA tournament back when those guys were playing would beat the brakes off some of these teams today.
Big Ten in the early to mid-90s was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, every team had an NBA dude for the most part.
I mean, you think about it, you had the great IU teams that went to the Final Four in the Elite Eight. You had the Fab Five. You obviously had guys like Jimmy Jackson.
Michael Finley.
Yeah.
I mean, every team had somebody really good. Minnesota made a run to the Final Four. Now, there may have been some allegations going on there.
Clem Haskin!
But I started thinking about the greatest players in Big Ten history, and I reminded Mr. Davis that there was a dude named Magic Johnson that once played at Michigan State. I heard your previous caller talking about him. Isaiah Thomas at Indiana.
Pretty good.
I thought those were guys that made other people better. Jerry Lucas. If you want to go in the time machine, Jerry Lucas was a machine at Ohio State.
Yeah, but I mean, even a guy like Calbert Chaney. I mean, isn't he still the all-time Big Ten scoring leader? I mean, how are you going to compare Zach Edey? And Zach Edey just happened to be 9 feet tall. Calbert Chaney had to earn every point that he got.
So the three, you know, and Chaney's in the conversation, and maybe Edey's in the conversation, but the three that I would rank, Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, Jerry Lucas. 1, 2, 3, you can mix, you can match. I think that's the list.
What was he basing it on? Was he basing it on points or records or awards?
So team success, accolades, and the fact that all the other guys that I mentioned, sans Jerry Lucas, had other NBA-type talent on the team. But my argument would be Magic and Isaiah, especially, made everybody else better. Mm-hmm. That's a trait they continued into their NBA career.
Yeah.
Like, they can beat you multiple ways. Magic Johnson once had to play center in an NBA Finals game. Isaiah Thomas could drive. He could shoot. He could pass the ball. They can beat you multiple ways. Zach Edey's not taking you outside.
Yeah, that guy's full of crap.
I agree.
Glad you gave him the business. What's coming up this afternoon?
Biggest stories of the day. We're just going to have a good time, man. Nobody has more fun than we do. So as soon as you get off work, if you're in your car, turn us on. We're going to have a good time.
Thanks, Hammer. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.